Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody, Foo followers around the world. Welcome to episode 68 of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast with your host, Ben Johnson. That is me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Before we get into it, a quick reminder that the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast is now in its sixth season. Since launching in 2016, we have spoken to many of the leading lights from the world of martial arts movies, including actors, directors, stunt performers, and fight choreographers. You can check out all of our previous episodes right now via all the major podcast providers. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Acast, and various other places. You can also listen to the show, read the latest film reviews, sign up to our newsletter, contact the show, and donate to the Kung Fu Movie Guide via our website, which is kungfumovieguide.com. And if you would like to send me an email, that would be greatly received. The email address is hello@kungfumovieguide.com. Okay, we have not one, not two, not three, but four people on today's show, which I think is a new record for this podcast. It's a Paper Tigers special, so without any further ado, let's get on with it. Here we go.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello, hello, hello there, Foo followers around the world, wherever you are listening to this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in, for streaming, or for downloading this episode of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. It's episode 68, and we've got something a little bit different today. It's a show which is dedicated to the release of just one movie in particular. The film is called The Paper Tigers, and it's a very heartwarming kung fu action comedy. It centers around three former kung fu training buddies who reunite in their middle age to investigate the sudden death of their boyhood kung fu master. It's very sweet. It's a low budget indie film, but it is also very funny as well, and it's got some incredible kung fu action scenes in it, courtesy of some great people like Ken Katigwa. Ken is the film's action director. You may recognize Ken from the 2015 martial arts film Unlucky Stars. The Paper Tigers also features contribution from members of the incredible Marshall Club team. That's the action performers and brothers, Andy Lee and Brian Lee. If you aren't aware of Marshall Club, by the way, then you really should Google them. They're named after a classic Shaw Brothers film from 1981, of course. Just some absolutely amazing stuff that those guys are producing. The Paper Tigers is released in cinemas and on digital in Canada and the USA on the 7th of May. That's this Friday, courtesy of Walgo USA. Head over to walgousa.com to find a full list of all the cinemas showing the movie, and you can also find links to buy tickets. Coming up on today's episode, you will hear my conversations with the film's director, writer, and producer. That's Tran Quoc Bao. And because it's an ensemble film, we also have a conversation to share with you with the film's three leading actors. So that's Arlene Ui, Ron Yuen, and Mikal Shannon Jenkins. So, to give you a bit of a taste of the film, here is a clip from the trailer.
No more challenges. Kung Fu without honor. It's just fighting.
Three tigers, baby.
Goddamn!
them.
That's right, that's right.
How that taste, old man?
Dad.
Yeah, buddy.
Do you know any kung fu?
I'm retired.
Who's the old guy?
That was our teacher. We called him Sifu.
You didn't hear? Sifu's dead. Something's not right.
There was no heart attack.
Do you think the poison fingers is real?
Yeah, Gao Sao. But yeah, don't
Ching Shao. Okay, just say it in English.
Just say it in English, man.
When the hands cross, all will be revealed.
There we go. That was a little clip from the trailer to The Paper Tigers. Now, it is rare for me to do a full episode just on one movie, so I should lay my cards on the table here before we get into this. Bao will explain that the film has taken 10 years to get to this point, unbelievably, where we are now celebrating its release. And I have known about Bao's work and this project in particular since his short film The Challenger, which was a proof of concept, which was released in 2015. So that's 6 years ago now. I'll be sure to put a link to The Challenger short film in the podcast description of this show. Do check it out. It is a great little fight scene and it really shows what Bao's capable of in filming action. It features both Andy Lee from Marshall Club and Ken Katigua, both of which would later go on to work on the Paper Tigers feature film. Before it got to that point, however, Bao did launch a Kickstarter campaign in 2018 to try and raise funds to get the feature film developed and to get it in the works, and there were some initial sequences that were filmed featuring the great actor Roger Ewan, brother of Ron Ewan, who you'll be hearing from in a little bit later on today's show. It was at this point that Bao and I did first start chatting just through Twitter. We were sort of helping as best we could, using our voice and our platform to try and raise awareness of the film and in particular the Kickstarter campaign. So look, it has been an incredibly long journey for Bao and the rest of the team who have worked on this film. It's been full of ups and downs over the years, which Bao will speak to in a little bit more detail during our chat. And look, if nothing else, this episode should prove just how hard it is to get an independent movie off the ground in Hollywood, not to mention an indie kung fu film, and particularly one with people of colour in the lead roles. So Bao's story of the many challenges that he faced over the last decade is quite extraordinary. So we've got that coming up on today's show. I have already reviewed The Paper Tigers. You can go to kungfumovieguide.com now to read what I had to say about the film. Needless to say, I did enjoy it very much. It is a very refreshing take on a kung fu film formula with some really great performances, and it's really very funny too. So look, I'll be sure to put a link to my full review in the description of this podcast, and I'll also put a link so you can watch the full trailer. There's not too much other news to update you all on this week, other than to say that last time on our previous show with Isaac Florentine, I did mention my excitement for the release of the new Mortal Kombat film. Now, I realise most of the world have probably seen the new Mortal Kombat film, I would imagine, but of course, because we are based here in the UK, we always seem to get a little bit shortchanged when it comes to the release schedules, particularly now anyway, given that everything is still a little bit up in the air here. So anyway, we got the news that the new Mortal Kombat film will be landing here in the UK on the 6th of May, so that's this Thursday, and it will be available to watch at home via all the usual digital retailers. And one can only hope that Mortal Kombat does indeed make it onto the big screen here when cinemas do reopen on the 17th of May. That's a date that many film fans here in the UK have got ingrained in their minds right now. as we eagerly anticipate the reopening of cinemas across the country and hopefully the return of some kind of normality with regards to the release schedule. I'm still trying to avoid all the spoilers out there on the internet, which is not easy, I can tell you. But anyway, the most hyped martial arts film of 2021 so far will shortly be landing with us. If you are a Mortal Kombat fan, then I will refer you on to my previous chats with two of its stars. That's Ludi Lin and Joe Taslim. And we are hopeful that we should have another one of its stars appearing on the podcast relatively soonish. I don't tend to like mentioning these things until everything is wrapped up and recorded and pretty much ready to go. But anyway, I thought I'd let you know, Foo followers, there are conversations going on in the background. Of course, if you do want to find out all the latest news about this show and the Kung Fu Movie Guide in general, then please do make sure that you follow us on social media. We are on Twitter. The name on Twitter is at KF Movie Guide. And we are also on Facebook and Instagram at Kung Fu Movie Guide. Okay then, let's get our Paper Tigers special underway. Both of these conversations that you are about to hear took place last Thursday, actually, as part of a press junket day. Now, I do tend to avoid these junkets, and later on when you hear my conversation with the stars of the film, you'll probably understand why. Junkets can be quite stressful sometimes for a journalist because you are usually up against a clock and you're usually talking to someone who has been sat down all day and they're just answering the same questions over and over again. So you don't always get a great response, but also just with the nature of this show, we do tend to go into a bit more detail with our guests, and usually you just don't get the time allocated as part of a press junket to do that. However, having said all of that, I do need to say a huge thank you to a few people who helped to make this possible. So Katie Jo Ash, Karen Tran Wood, and Kim Gutierrez at MPRM, thank you all so much for your help in setting this up on the day and for allocating both 30 minutes with Bao and 30 minutes with the cast as well. So a huge thank you to Katie, Karen, and Kim, especially for sorting out a bit more time with everybody for this show. So in a little bit you will hear from three of the film's leading actors, but before we throw over to that, this is how the film actually got made from the point of view of its main driving force. Here we go then, here is my conversation with the director, writer and producer of The Paper Tigers, Tran Quoc Bao. How are you feeling right now? You're on press day. The film's coming out next week. This is a long time coming. I mean, what sort of emotions are you feeling?
Yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, it's definitely surreal. You know, we never imagined we'd be opening a film in the middle of a pandemic. But that's not what we had envisioned and imagined, but here we are. So that obviously makes it a little bit,
strange.
Strange, yeah. At the end of the day, we just want to be in theaters, or at least in a way that people can be able to see it in a wide way and let them decide. Because I think for the whole story of making the film, you know, I'm 10 years in on making this film, but the gatekeepers and the people that, you know, the naysayers and the things that, you know, that would say, you know, about how this movie couldn't be done, etc. All that goes away now, and we finally be able to clear the table. And we have, you know, everything we asked for, just to tell our story. Here we are. And if people can see it and enjoy it, then great. So that's all that we asked for.
Well, Bao, I've got to say, I love this film. So I really enjoyed it. I've seen it a few times now. I really do. I do like it. So first of all, congratulations, I should say, because you've made a great movie here.
Thank you.
Now, I want to say, because in the credits, there's 2 years written down. I forget the dates specifically, but it says 2011 to 2021. So I just want to know what was happening in 2011 then. Let's go all the way back if we can.
Let's go all the way back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the initial germ of an idea then for this movie?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the catch. I usually just put a little timestamp on all my films so I remember a testament of when it started and when we actually finished. So it's it could be either an embarrassing number.
You know, it's out there. I hope the next movie isn't so long.
I hope so too. Yeah. I hope so too. But yeah, that was the story when I first came as an idea, as a sketch. You know, we actually had gone to a pitch lab, and I kind of like started. That kind of got me going to start to write a page about it. And I just went in with a page at that point, but just kind of knowing that there was some interest, like, kind of gave it a little bit more lift, you know, and so it encouraged me to kind of keep writing and opening up and developing at that. But at the end of the day, it really just was a story about kind of rediscovering things that were valuable to you. And for me, two things that I grew up with that I was very passionate about with martial arts and filmmaking. You know, I started making films and backyard videos and amateur videos in the backyard with my dance camcorder. And then it's one thing to do it as a hobby, but then to turn it to a profession is a different thing. And you start to kind of see the business side, the seedier side, the things that are not so, you know, not so attractive or appealing. And you kind of, I was feeling a little burnt out. I just wanted to kind of take that emotion into, what it could be for a martial arts film. Like, what does that look like in the martial arts? You know, you can fall out of love from martial arts too, right? You know, you could grow up and be really passionate about it, but then go your separate ways. And then were those things important to you? Were those real emotions that you felt? And what is that process of rediscovery and coming back to it? So just all in a nutshell, thematically, is what was inspiring me towards, to kind of like tell the story of these characters who kind of fall out of love, back in love, but ultimately it's about finding each other. Yeah. Not just martial arts, you know, finding and realizing the family that they had around them.
You've even worked with Corey Ewan, or did you meet, or you've been inspired by Corey Ewan before making this? Is that right? You've always had an interest in martial arts cinema, Hong Kong kung fu movies.
Yeah, I grew up watching Hong Kong movies, and that was kind of the diet, watching Hong Kong and Asian movies at home because it was through Chinatown rentals. And then going out and seeing Spielberg and Cameron in the big multiplexes, right?
Yeah.
Fortunately, you know, I crossed paths with Corey Ewan. He's a family friend, and at that time, you know, I was making said backyard videos, really amateur stuff. But he was very generous at the time and mentored me and gave me tips and tricks and talked about, you know, the career of filmmaking and just kind of set me on my way about making action movies specifically and just thinking about, you know, all these bigger thing, think about the audience. Don't just think in terms of your backyard. When you make a movie, whether it's big or small, think about what it means like for the world. So it's like that really just kind of like blew my mind and opened up the possibilities of what it means to make films. And and just the thinking around action, you know, he would always say, you know, you can't have good action without a good story. So always find a way to kind of base it and ground it with the characters, what's happening with the story and all that. So that just was like, that was my film school. I never went to film school, but that was my film school, just having this masterclass with Corey. So that's, again, you know, a testament to this movie is just paying tribute to our teachers and our masters. So I'm sure that all swirls into, you know, the making of this film in many different ways, and you can feel that impact.
Yeah.
To that point, it was just like the inspiration was just like having obviously all in Hong Kong movies kind of like obviously very known for these genre mashups and just like a little, the lines aren't as clear in those films that I always really appreciate and love.
yeah, it's funny 1 minute and then there's some incredibly violent fight scene in a mad stunt the next. So yeah. You worked a lot as an editor as well, so you're getting lots of experience producing your own short films. You landed on the idea for the story for Paper Tigers, and you wanted to direct this, and you knew this is going to be a feature film. This is going to be my movie. There was no compromise there.
Yeah, there were a couple of detours along the way in the sense that making movies at that time is like pretty DIY. You have to kind of write and direct and edit because there's no one else to direct, you know, do these other departments for you. So a big inspiration was, you know, like Robert Rodriguez, Rebel Without Crew. That I think empowered a lot of my generation to just grab the camera and make your movie. So there was a lot of chutzpah around that.
Yeah.
And because of that, I had a lot of friends who were going back to Vietnam to make films, and they needed editors. So just by experience, like I didn't really fancy myself as a proper editor, but I went, you know, back there and gave what I could and edited features out there. But I always knew this Paper Tigers was as a feature that I wanted to direct. So even though I was editing more and more projects, it was like at the point you kind of have to kind of like cut your ties, because people will start to see you more as an editor, right?
Yeah.
But I took all that experience and brought into making this film. And so in that point, I always knew I was going to make the film. And it was just like, there are a lot of these things that kind of like, a lot of opportunities that can kind of like take you on these side trips. But these are all valuable and gave me the experience, I think, into making this film.
The first sort of inklings of this was the sort of proof of concept, the Challenger, but that was 2015, so even that was a few years in the making. Could you explain what that experience was like to make that short film, working with Ken and Andy and people like that?
Yeah, Ken, obviously I've worked with him for many short films and many projects before, so we have a great working relationship. Andy's, you know, obviously this amazing talent out of Marshall.
Incredible.
I'm glad we could get him for the feature version. But at that time we needed to kind of figure out proof concept. At that time it was very trendy, you know, and just trying to figure out how to prove yourself and show that you can do it. We knew we could do it, but we just need to show other people.
Yeah.
And we tried it and we did it and it was great. And I think, I'm very proud of it. I love the piece a lot.
It's great.
But in terms of, thank you. Yeah, and then it was also like, trying to get that into financing. That's a different ball of wax. Like, it's one thing to make it, you know, a really good short or a solid piece, but it's another thing to kind of convince financiers. So, again, they kind of hit the same walls all around that. So, turning to Kickstarter and crowdfunding to raise the money was kind of the last hurrah, or kind of the last resort,
because yeah,
we just were not getting the traction that we needed. That we thought we could get with the Challenger and whatnot. And we ended up shooting, you know, pieces of the film of the Paper Tigers, you know, 2 years before the main production, with Yoshi and Peter and Guy and all that, and Roger and all the cast.
Yeah.
And we actually used that footage to do our Kickstarter. So nothing was traditional about this. And it was almost like a boyhood in a weird way, the Kung Fu boyhood. But it was just a funny way of like making movies and not traditional at all, but we just had to do it by hook or by crook.
Yeah.
But we're just proud of every piece that we did, because again, it was just like at the end of the day, we just kind of like come at it 100%, giving our full dedication and focus, and just hope the work speaks for itself. And, you know, I'm glad that we can come full circle, at least to show that the Challenger, you know, came to fruition in the long run. In this way.
By that point, you were sort of cutting your teeth as, you know, actually directing a fight scene. You know, that's a great fight scene, and developing those skills, where to place the camera, working in the previs, the fight choreography, you know, all that jazz. You know, it's a huge undertaking. Was it a bit of that then? You were setting up the Paper Tigers, but also, you know, it was a bit of a test for yourself, really, about, you know, try and film a really good fight scene.
Yeah, I think it's all the above. We had the script for the Paper Tigers done before, so I think it was also trying to figure out how to extrapolate, you know, what it means. I think we were also playing around with the, you can see the Danny slow motion idea. We were playing around kind of the different aesthetic around that eventually kind of ends up with the main film. So a lot of that was kind of lab work, you know, experimentation, but, you know, we just wanted to make also a solid fight scene. I think it was more that we knew what we could do. It wasn't that about us trying to figure things out. We knew what we could do. We just needed to show that other people that we could do it.
Yeah.
I think I was just the whole kind of the stream of stories that we just kind of believed in ourselves Yeah, all the way through. And then it was just kind of finding the right people who could see what we could do and get on board with it.
You raised the finance then to get that reel for Cannes. Now, that's the sequence that's still in the film, isn't it? The Roger Ewan stuff and the sort of flashback sequence at the start. By that point, you'd made a really good short film. You had footage in the can, as it were. You had a finished script. What were the sort of barriers that you were facing to try and get this into a feature film?
Well, to kind of speak a little bit broadly on the business side of making films, you know, you're this under $10 million space of making films, and especially genre films or martial arts or acting films. You know, there are certain names that we know are kind of like leading men, you know, or leading stars, that kind of marquee even the space, and it's very lucrative, and you know, we all know the well-known people. But the problem is that our cast breakdown didn't reflect, you know, those names. Like, who we were looking for were not, you know, Scott Adkins or Wesley Snipes or any of that, which are, you know, they're all amazing in their own right, but they weren't fits for what we were looking for this film. You know, those were big macho guys, and clearly our guys are not macho. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, we were looking for the off kilter element. So at the end of the day, you know, the challenge around financing is casting. And if you can have obviously a good name that can lead your and anchor your film, then you can get your movie financed fairly quickly. But by nature of the story that we're doing, that was so off-kilter and then so different that, you know, it just didn't afford those possibilities for casting. So, you know, we had a lot of interest in the film, but they were like, can you change the cast to white people? And, you know, you can kind of look at, you know, two different ways. It's definitely kind of a racist, prejudicial system, but also it's kind of a business thing, catch-22. It's like we just don't have people in that space that are leading stars, but also of the type of, you know, out of shape look that we were looking for. So a lot of things kind of came together on that.
Is that true then, Bao? Because I read that they wanted Bruce Willis for this film. Is that right?
Well, you know... Yeah, so we had a lot of meetings. Let's put it this way. We had a lot of meetings and a lot of names were thrown about. So it was just like, and these are the people that in this space, like I mentioned, under 10, Bruce Willis can get your movie made, right? Yeah. So these are all like these names that these studios or the companies kind of use as a shorthand. You know, it's like that kind of makes you go, did you guys read the scripts? And then, like, I don't think you read like what we're trying to do. But in their minds, this is how you package a film. And yes, Bruce Willis was one of the names that came out. There was a lot of interest, again, in making the film, but with a caveat, like, can you change it to the cast of white? Because now we can sell it or whatever. And, you know, I got to shout out XYZ Films, who are great production company and sales agents in the space, you know, but they do it right. Like, they know how to nurture the filmmaker's vision, but also get into the marketplace. So they saw all these meetings as BS as well. So they were very supportive and just kind of like, oh, don't worry about it. And they, you know, we weren't discouraged for long. So we were just like, kind of stay the course, but they just knew that, you know, they believed in us. And those were the type of that people that we wanted to find elsewhere to also collaborate with us. You know, you want people who understand and believe in you and not have to kind of keep saying Bruce Willis every 5 seconds.
Yeah, I know. How crazy. That's literally only a few years ago, isn't it? Because you were pitching, 5 years ago? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's quite depressing,
granted, this was before... Yeah, granted, this was before Crazy Rich Asians or Black Panther.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe those are conversation starters, but I will tell you, like, my phone's not ringing. so at this point, like, what does it mean to, like, actually make, you know, steps forward? So that's the challenge I think that we always have. I think every movie is going to be hard to make. You're going to have a lot of no's and rejections, period, like all across the board. But to make, you know, movies that have particular characters of color in it makes it that much harder. And there's, you know, it just puts you even further behind to be able to kind of get this across the board. It's just, I would like to say it's gotten better. I would like to say that, but I think it's still a little early to tell, even though it's a buzzword and, you know, a lot of things are bandied about. But the other element is that we have original work, right? It's one thing to reboot something, and it's one thing to refresh or adapt with, you know, cast of color versus creating something from scratch with cast of color.
This is the other thing, you know, when the studios are offering, you know, the type of money just to get your movie made, you could understand if some directors just say, you know, fair enough. And then they compromise their vision, but then the film gets made. Do you see what I mean? I guess you can't really blame a filmmaker to necessarily going down that route, can you? I suppose
this is a challenge. So I'm pretty laissez-faire about, you know, how other people do their business, because I think it's just so hard. Like, to your point, it is really, really hard to make a movie, period. And you're going to have to make decisions, whether it's right or wrong. But you basically, you know, have to live with the decision. So if you can do something and you're okay with that, then I think it's more power to you. But if it's something that you just feel like off or wrong, like, I guess for me, my BS meter is just too strong or something. Yeah. Like, it just would never sit right to do it. You know, for another movie, if it made sense, yeah, of course, you know, as long as it makes sense, you know, more money is not a bad thing. It's never a bad thing, but it just needs to make sense and you have some type of creative control. And that's always a challenge, especially for people of color in the industry or minority actors and stuff like that. That's always a challenge because we have this, say, for example, for actors of color, you know, do you take a job that maybe is more stereotypical or, you know, something that's not exactly positive portrayal of your people, or do you refuse the job? And I think it's a tough decision because sometimes you do have to put food on your table.
You got
to
work. You
got to work. So I'm understanding around that because it's just, and it's unfortunate that we're putting to that situation and that we have to, or pit against each other and have to make these decisions against each other about that. But to me, at the end of the day, you know, can you live with it? Are you okay with it? Do you feel like that's the thing that you want to be known for? And if it is, then go for it.
Dragon Fest.
Just on the crowdfunding, the Kickstarter thing, I mean, you know, that's sort of a full-time job in itself, isn't it? Because you've constantly got to be, you know, on at people. Did you have a figure in mind that you needed then, and you thought crowdsourcing would be a, you know, that would be a good route to go?
Well, crowdsourcing wasn't, when we did Kickstarter, it wasn't our full sum of money because it would just been impossible to raise the whole budget.
Yeah. But we what wanted was the budget out of interest?
It came in around the range of $1 million.
Yeah, okay.
And then the Kickstarter obviously is about a tenth of that. So we needed to kind of like find something that was in range that we could do realistically in Kickstarter, but also make a splash, to be honest, because it is part of a way of getting people to know about your project. And there's a lot of Kickstarters that kind of do it around the 30-40 or just cover post, you know, which is if you're a smart person, you would do that. But we did the other thing that we needed a lot of money to make a movie that didn't exist, right? You know, so it's like that was finding the sweet spot, because Kickstarter is a very, very stressful, very challenging experience. I don't know if you've ever done it, but it's harder than making the movie. I will be honest to say that making the movie is like, it's a stress that we know and it's a stress that we embrace, but like Kickstarter is a whole different thing. And you're really out there. Your just neck is out on the line publicly. And you know, if you don't hit your target number, you don't get it. So it's a very public death if you were not to get your goal. And then it's, in a lot of ways, it's a project killer, because then it also shows that, you know, your movie is, you know, it went to market and, you know, no one bit. So that was the other risk, you know, in terms of putting it out there like that.
So what has motivated you and kept you going for 10 years? Just belief in the project, in the script?
What got me through is just, I guess, sheer stubbornness. Yeah. I think it was a bit of like, it's a bit of attrition, because it's one thing to kind of like talk about it and then like a finance behind the scenes, and if it doesn't happen, then it's fine. You can move on to the next project. But I think the fact that we were so public, that we put everything out there, we put the Challenger, we put the Kickstarter out, we just had like everything that was out there. And if we just stopped making the movie, you know, our Kickstarter backers would come looking for us or whatever. Yeah. It was at a point, it just like, it became inevitable. I'd like to say it was all sheer willpower, but in a lot of ways it was just inevitable, in the sense that the rock was building up and building up steam in such a way that we just had to make it. There was just no other option.
That was August 2019 you filmed. How many days did you get?
Yeah, so keep in mind, we shot that beginning portion, the prologue, with Yoshi and Peter and Guy and Roger about 2 years before that.
Yeah.
So that was about 5 days. And then we got to the bigger portion. That was about 28 days. So all in all, it was about 35 days of shooting.
Okay, that's not too bad, is it? You hear of indie films that are turning, you know, and even indie action films, you know, in like 20 days, some of them.
Yeah, and that's always the challenge. I think also like finding that, what is that bare minimum? Because for action, you do have to spend some money, even just safety around stunts and just coordination. Like there's a bare minimum that you have to do. But with indie filmmaking, obviously your financing goals, like you always have to ask yourself, is this the bare minimum that I could spend? I need to spend to make this movie. And there is, like, you can tighten your belt only so much, right? You have to still give it a polish. You want to give it the look. You want to give the action team the things that they need to succeed. So if you skimp too much on the budget, you know, I think a lot of things suffer, and in a lot of ways it falls apart at a certain point. It doesn't just suffer. It, like, everything just doesn't work anymore.
And we should say the film does have quite a few extended fight scenes. You've got that wonderful sequence in the swimming pool with the Marshall Club boys, and then you've got this great comedic fight with Matthew Page, who's wonderful in this film, Master Ken. And then obviously the big fight with Elaine at the end there. So that was imperative for you, was it, then, Bao, to make sure you nail those fight scenes?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to say you're making a kung fu movie, you know, everyone's going to be expecting a lot. So it definitely kind of put our necks out on that part. Obviously the benefit of, the benefit of taking 10 years to make a movie is that you get 10 years to talk about making it.
Yeah.
And so Ken Kitagawa, our action director, and I, we would spend so much time just talking and riffing and looking at stuff throughout the years and just being inspired by different things. So it was a lot of like that brainstorming, you know, development work that we had going into it. And it's funny, you know, once you get the money and finance and green light to make the movie, it's like go, go, go. And actually, you know, we didn't have much time in actual pre-production. You know, actors came on maybe 3 to 4 weeks before the shoot, and the training was super condensed and, you know, hyper-focused. But just the fact that we had spent so much time doing our homework, yeah, I like to think kind of got us through that a little bit more efficiently. We always want more time, but, you know, at the end of the day, we just had to deal with what we have. So Ken's and approach and Ken and I's approach to it was just like, we were always on the same page in terms of the action, is that it was always a little off kilter. It's like, we called it like, it's Shaw Brothers in a street fight, you know. Yeah. It's sloppy, it's messy, but it does have kung fu shapes. There's a couple flavors here and there, but you know, they're tripping, they're slipping, and it's not always as clean as we like it to be. And that's what we want. So there's a lot of deprogramming, from our point of view, because when we make action movies, you know, especially with Corey, it's like, you know, go for the beauty, go for, you know, what is like that the Hong Kong cinema is like so precise and so pristine about it. But in a lot of ways, our characters were about not that, you know, yeah, deconstructing that, breaking that down and taking the take where it's not the best looking kick, but take the other take where it's a sloppier kick, you know, and being able to kind of like go down that. And it's, you know, that's kind of a new territory for all of us, but that was what we had to kind of keep going to make it truthful for the characters. Yeah.
But that's what it works, because that's the journey of the characters, because they're middle-aged guys by this point. They're not supposed to be, you know, very good. I know Mikhail's character's completely forgotten all of his kung fu training. So, you know, there's comedy in that, but obviously, you know, that's part of their character.
100%. Yeah, I mean, that's like, if you get it, you get it. And we, again, with the Bruce Willis, you'd think it's obvious, but it's not. So we would often, we'd have these conversations with a lot of martial arts actors that we, you know, had considered for the role of Danny. But, you know, a lot of them didn't get it. They're like, but Danny loses his fight. I don't get it. Yeah. Like, they didn't see themselves as losing the fight. I was like, okay, well, again, if you get it, you get it. But if you're stuck on, you know, but the hero always wins, or I'm the star of movies, I will always win my fights, you know, and then you're just not quite, you know, on the same page with us. So at the end of the day, it's interesting when it's we think it's obvious, but it's not so obvious.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
You bastard! Come on then!
You had your premiere at Fantasia, August 2020, so that was right in the midst of COVID. So were you a little bit sort of put out that you didn't get a big, you know, the big sort of red carpet treatment and canapes and drinks and all that sort of stuff, just to celebrate, you know, a 10-year journey? That would have been quite nice, wouldn't it, I suppose, Belle?
Oh, for sure. I mean, obviously, no one imagined where we were, but obviously, it was a surreal thing not to have it, to be able to see the movie, at least, and enjoy the movie in person. And Fantasia, you know, tried their best, and all credit to all these film festivals that, you know, tried their best to at least go virtual, because it is ultimately is about having community engaged with the movies. So I certainly don't want to take anything away from them, and yeah, we're thankful for that. But it was a little surreal, you know, having a Zoom Q&A of our world premiere, and the actors had just seen it. You know, they were so high on just seeing the final cut, and then like we got kicked off our Zoom, and I was just sitting in my room in the dark alone. Like, so it's just kind of like, I was like, all right, well, champagne, you and me. But yeah, it was just like that's the experience. But also, you know, to go through the whole film festival experience of being in lockdown, like we couldn't go to Busan. That would have been an amazing experience to share the movie with, and all those things. But, you know, it is what it is in terms of, you know, a lot of people have been really hit hard by the pandemic. So all things considered, you know, we should be thankful, and we are thankful for what we were able to experience. And we sold the movie. You know, we ticked all the boxes of a successful indie film, and we have a distribution, you know, coming around the bend. But, you know, for me, artistically, it does not feel real until we see this with a crowd. So that's what we're most hyped about and excited about. So.
There will be a limited theater run, I'm guessing, COVID dependent, I guess. But are you planning a big, you know, screening? You get all the cast together eventually when we're allowed to?
Yeah, yeah. We do have a limited theater run here in the U.S. We'll be screening around, looks like all told, 50 theaters for opening weekend. Hopefully, you know, we can expand and build on that. But yeah, anything that we get in our hometown here in Seattle and L.A., we are planning some appearances and having at least some screening opportunities. There's also drive-ins that are also lined up. So those are all, you know, we're trying to all get creative to be all around. And internationally, you know, UK, well, it's TBD. We're trying to sell the movie and get the final distributor. So yeah, if you know someone, pull some strings.
Yeah, yeah, I can have a word. So, Bao, what's next? I mean, has this put you off doing another martial arts film? Or I know you've done other genres as well, but you know, what's sort of next for you?
Yeah, I'm writing. I'm kind of tinkering with a couple ideas. I do want to kind of keep growing and as features. I feel like, at least at this stage, I've said what I needed to say about Kung Fu, you know, artistically. If another Kung Fu idea comes up, I'm totally open for it. But it does feel like, you know, we've just put this all on the table here with this movie and just, you know, trying to tell all the things that we needed to say. So it's a little hard, you know, once you birth the baby, it's a little, you're asking about the next child. So it's a little bit like, oh. But yeah, I think in all due time, there will be, you know, a next project. And I'm, you know, excited to kind of keep building on what we were able to kind of start with here. And hopefully, like you're saying, it'll take much less time. The timestamp will be much shorter.
Well, Bao, for a feature film debut, I think you've done a tremendous job. And I think it's admirable that you haven't compromised on your story, which, you know, so many people probably would have. I wish you every success with it. Good luck with the release.
Thank you. Cheers, Ben. And again, thank you so much for all your coverage up to now. It's been, incredible.
No worries.
We did it together.
We did it. Yeah. Well, it's nice to finally, you know, finally chat to you. So that's, that's great.
Likewise. Cheers.
Who are you? A man not scared of death. Right. Well, we'll see. Kill!
Trang Quoc Bao there, the director, writer and producer of The Paper Tigers. Really great to finally chat to Bao. We've been sort of text corresponding for a number of years now, so that was really nice to finally chat properly. You can keep up to date with all the latest news from Bao on social media. He is on Twitter and Instagram. His name on both of those accounts is @_TranQuocBao. He is also on Facebook and Vimeo under Tran Quoc Bao. And if you do want to find out more information about Bao and his work, then he does have a website. The website is pov-films.com. Okay then, I was also lucky enough to spend some time chatting to the stars of The Paper Tigers. Each of them are very well-known actors and filmmakers in their own right. They are Arlene Ui. Arlene plays Danny in the film. He has worked on a lot of TV over the years, including roles in season 2 of True Detective and the new Marvel series, Hallstrom. That is available now on the Hulu streaming platform. You will also hear from martial arts film legend Ron Yuen. Ron plays Hing in the film, and his numerous roles in action and martial arts cinema in particular stretch all the way back to the early 90s and are too numerous to mention. He works across Hollywood and China, and more recently Ron has been focusing on directing. And Mikal Shannon Jenkins rounds off the three tigers. Mikal plays Jim in the film. Fight fans will of course know Mikal from his role as Turbo in Undisputed 3. Mikal is also a personal trainer. He's been acting in TV and film for over 20 years now, as well as working on his own projects. So each of the main cast do bring a huge wealth of knowledge and experience to the table in this film, and they all have an incredible passion for the project, which I think is quite clear and quite palpable, I would say, during this conversation. So I'll throw over to that conversation now. As I said earlier, this was a little bit of a tricky conversation to coordinate and manage, given that I was essentially on a virtual call where I had all three of their faces up on my screen all at the same time, each of them being in separate locations around America and with me here in London. So it was a little bit chaotic, and I hope it sounds okay and it does make sense. But anyway, I do hope that you enjoy listening back to this. I will be back at the end of this conversation to sign off properly. But before then, here we go then. Here is my conversation with the stars of The Paper Tigers. That's Arlene Ui, Ron Yuen, and Mikal Shannon Jenkins.
How are you?
How's it all going?
Welcome to the party. Welcome.
Yes.
Welcome to our party here.
So I'm in the UK here. It's quite late here, but you've been doing this for solidly since this morning then, have you?
Yep.
Yeah. 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 We've been partying.
Yeah.
Since
8. Yeah. Feels like it just started though.
Is it nice to get back on a call with all you guys? Because you made the movie a few years ago now, wasn't it? 2019?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good to hang out again.
I'm tired of these guys. I see him.
Sure. Yeah,
because Ron is so pretty. I mean, he I don't know if you don't notice, but he's been switching hats every other interview. This guy's got a new outfit, and then Mikhail's switching outfits too. It's nice. it's been a fashion show.
Yeah.
it's always good.
Are you all dotted around at various different places? Where are you all based?
I'm based in LA, but I'm currently in New York. We're shooting an anti-hate video, anti-Asian hate video, yeah, right now.
Okay, so. Okay.
LA.
Yeah.
Yeah, LA. You're in Los Angeles? Yeah, and LA. Yeah, LA as well. Good stuff. So, Ron, am I right in saying, because you're down as a co-producer on this movie, were you involved before the rest of the guys then? You've been involved for quite a while in this project?
No. It was, maybe a little before Elaine and Miguel, but as far as the producers, Eugene, Allen, Daniel, like all the guys, there's so many great guys in Bao. They've been actually trying to get this going for like 6-7 years, and it's been, you know, a long indie
long journey.
A long journey, and I'm so glad that, you know, they started, and I'm just glad to be a part of it.
They're waiting on me, player.
So did you guys, you all sort of auditioned around the same time then, is that right?
I don't know. I mean, I think Ron was attached to this.
I met the filmmakers through one of the producers, Yuji Okamoto, and we've been friends for over 20-some years. So he told me about this great script, wanted me to meet this talented director, and I was like, yeah, I'll give it a read, and I fell in love with the script. It's like that. So
funny script.
I didn't have the fortune to I'm not in the level as Ron is in terms of getting an offer directly. So I had to work for this role and convince Bao that I was right for the part. That's an audition process for sure.
So Elaine, what was the thing then that you really sort of latched onto when you first read for the role? What was it that drew you into this movie?
Honestly, I was hesitant at first because, you know, it's a kung fu movie, and I don't know too much martial arts. I mean, I have some kind of background, but also there's a responsibility there that the filmmaker has in terms of making sure that this film isn't just a kung fu flick, and that's kind of in some ways what I was looking for. So there was some trepidation, if I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute I read the script, the minute I started to see and investigate and ask my own questions in terms of the characters and why are you telling this story now? Like, why are these characters happening now? It was really relevant to me because at the time I was going through my own personal journey, having my parents just recently retired in 2019, and I have a 4-year-old, you know, the character Danny really spoke to me in terms of him trying to juggle so many different things and still also dealing with his past and understanding what that is for everybody. You know, the 20-year-old, 19-year-old version of you is still there. How do you deal with that now that you're a little older and having to come back to that version of yourself? Like, can you imagine meeting yourself, you know, 20 years later? I mean, that's or 25, 30 years later. That's kind of what this movie is. You're kind of faced with a lot of the stuff that you did and a lot of the reputation that you've built because of that version of yourself. And I think, I mean, that's a powerful, you know, situation to be in. And I wanted to, you know, breathe life into it and kind of live that out. So I was definitely privileged and honored to have had the opportunity to work on this film.
Yeah. And a lot of fighting for you as well. I mean, for someone who hasn't done a lot of fight films, there's a lot of action in the movie for you.
There was. Yeah. And it was a welcome change for sure.
Yeah.
In terms of all the other characters I've played.
Yeah. Yeah. Mikhail, you've done a fair bit of sort of on-screen fighting in the past. Yeah. Undisputed 3, huge fan of that movie. Mikhail, what drew you to this film?
I'm going to also be a little bit honest. I read the script and I thought out loud, this could be corny as, or it could be a classic.
Yeah.
I don't know any of these players. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, and I don't recast. I don't do all that. Oh, they got such and such. That doesn't do anything. So I don't even look it up. So we had rehearsals, and I really wanted it to be good because I really liked what I read. But, you know, I show up at the rehearsal, and I'm a little like, because I'm the only African-American in the room at the time. So I'm feeling a little, you know, nervous about the whole situation. And brilliantly, Bao starts these improvs. And these two gentlemen above me kicked it off. and to watch their minds work and the questions they were asking about and the questions he was asking them. Like, by the time they got through with that, I knew, like, it's in our hands.
Yeah.
And I called my wife from the same spot. I was like, this is going to be an effing classic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And from that point on, they set the bar. I just love it when actors don't come in reading and pretending like they can't effing act when they went through all the trouble to be cast. Like, let's go to work. And they came in firing at a very high level. So I was like, immediately I already, so if you thought you was going to phone it in, none of that's happening. Like, all of this is going to be flushed out. So immediately I became super enthusiastic about it. And to come to find out, that's just their work habit. That's who they are. So we took to the material, and then, like, it's just crazy. You just get good fortune. Sometimes that's why I say never be passing up this to do that. This person is doing this one, so you want to work with that. Hey, man, let me tell you something. You better let your spirit guide you. You better be careful about what you say no to, because you could find yourself having let go of a jewel like Slumdog or like this one or like Friday King, and find yourself doing some big mega shit that was like dog poo-poo. So, like, this is reaffirmed for me once again. Trust my inside gut. Like, I felt something special about it. And then I met these cats. Not only did I have a great experience as an artist, these are some very superior type actors on some real shit. Yeah. So, like, books being exchanged and information. I just became a better instrument as an artist playing with these guys.
Great. Ron, I just want to, I mean, you're a veteran of this, you know, the action world. You know, you've worked with everyone. Mark Dacascos, Michael Jai White, bloody Jet Li. You've just worked with Donnie Yen. You know, all the legends. This story, this film, the way that Bao tells this story. I mean, I've seen a million martial arts films, but I've not seen one quite like this. That must have been appealing to you, Ron.
It was. You are so right on the money with that. It was so appealing because this was a character study. You know, when I got the script, and that's what I loved about it. It wasn't the typical stuff. And you know, like you said, you know, tons of guys from Jackie to Gary Daniels to Michael Jai to Mark to, you know, Jet, the Chuck Norris's. And for me, like, sometimes, you know, there's certain things. I think Donnie would do something because he recently did something, you know, Fat Dragon, you know, Enter the Fat Dragon. So where you can make fun of, you know, yourselves or just, you know, poke at a slice of reality when, as you get older, you just can't move like you used to. Yeah. So I'm feeling that now, you know, and then when I got the script and, you know, I was just like, God, this is brilliant, because I haven't seen, like, we've seen, you know, great stuff from Stephen Chow and Hong Kong stuff, but as an Asian American film, we've never done this kind of movie. So for me, I felt, you know, the filmmakers, the producers, like they had a great instinct. Like, this is different. This is going to be special. And then getting the right guys for it, like Elaine and Miguel, they were perfect. I mean, just, you know, we clicked. That's why we clicked so much. I think everyone kind of sensed that this would be something unique. You know?
Well, that's the key to it, because you are the three tigers. I mean, you guys are like brothers in arms, you know?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
You know, you grew up together, you trained together. When you were filming, did you meet up, you know, when you weren't working and sort of hang out and stuff? Yeah, because it's vital, isn't it, really? Yeah.
There wasn't a second we spent apart.
Great. Not a second. We ate everything
breakfast,
together.
Lunch, dinner, after the
lunch, dinner, exactly. Shopping, you know.
Oh, just, God.
Watching some movie theaters.
Eating.
I know who you are, you bastard. Your time has come, then your son.
All of you guys have worked as directors as well in the past on your own projects. You've all worked to get your own projects off the ground. Is it a different, you know, atmosphere on set when you're making a movie like this, when literally every dollar really counts, doesn't it? You know, it's it's not a massive budget movie. So I guess that question's sort of directed at all of you, because you're all filmmakers as well. So, was there a real sort of can-do attitude on set, would you say?
I'm just
Go ahead. Yeah. You know, the minute you talk to the producers in terms of their story and understanding, as we mentioned during this conversation, how diligent and how adamant and how much they persevered through the journey as a producer of someone who, you know, you create your own stuff, you can't help but admire that.
Yeah.
And you can't help but root for them and help be a part of it. And I think that's where it all starts, really. You know, you could sense the enthusiasm, you could sense the passion that everybody had there. No one's getting really paid in this thing. It's sweat equity in many ways, right? It's like, mm-hmm. what can I put forth to help you guys get on your journey? Like, I've used this metaphor before, but in some ways, this is a relay race, right? So Bao and like, he created the script. He was the first leg of this race. And then now we're here at the end where we're kind of given the baton to help get it across the finish line.
Yeah.
And that is a lot of weight and responsibility that we all have as actors to look back and say, you guys ran this race as fast as you could. And I'm sure you guys are exhausted. And as filmmakers, we understand that process, right? We understand that there is so much that has occurred even before we get on set. Mm-hmm. So it's a precious moment. It's a precious time. And you just don't want to fumble the bag, you mm-hmm. know? And I think we owe it to each other to be like, hey, I'm carrying this as best as I can because I know how much everything that you've been through to get to this point.
Yeah.
And I think, like you mentioned before, all of us as filmmakers, we understand that. And how, like you said, like it, we don't have the budget to be like, hey, I don't feel good or whatever it is. Yeah. But yeah.
Or the days, you know, there's no time for egos, is there? Yeah. Right. You know, you've just got to get down and do the work. Mikhail, sorry, I talked over you there. Were you going to add to that?
No, I was just going to say that's where he was lucky. You have three filmmakers who get it.
Yeah.
So as soon as we signed on, we know we don't have no call times. We're not watching clocks. We're not trying to make sure meal penalties. We just want to ball out, like, for providing us with this opportunity. We know they took us to dinner and told us what they went through. Not that we weren't already locked in, but then it got really serious. I was like, okay, these guys are basically taking their lives and handed it to us to finish. So let's finish this.
I wanted to follow up on that because I just spoke to Bao and he mentioned that there was opportunities years ago. He was having studio meetings where they would have put money into this movie, but they wanted a white cast or leading with Bruce Willis or something. God knows how that would have worked. But I just want to know, does that give you even a bigger sort of weight of responsibility in the sense of Bao was... You know, he stuck to his vision. He stuck to his guns with this. He must be very proud, I'd imagine, to be part of this vision. Yeah.
For me, because I've been acting since I was a little kid, but crossing over to film and TV, I came over in the 80s. So we went through a lot of that as actors and filmmakers back then. You know, it's very, you know, very, very, very small roles. Either you're the computer math geek, the takeout boy, or the Yakuza or Chinese triangle. So what would you rather be? We'd rather be the bad guys because it's a little power and control and that, you know, hopefully that you can shape some other stuff and layers in. But like answering a combination of both your questions, some of my best times were on indie films, and this is like probably one of two of, you know, and a lot of films, like it just as far as the passion, the mission. And again, I applaud Bao and the producers because, he could have sold. I mean, I've seen a lot of friends in the past or peers that did sell it, you know, and I, at first you could say it's very easy for us to say sell out, but also people have to pay their bills. People have to pay rent, you know, and the fact that Bao and the guys stuck to their gun, you know, when they could have sold it, all they had to do was change everyone white, you know, but they stuck to their guns and like, you know, let the world see now that, hey, look, you know, it's, you know, there's many different cultures, many POC. There's POC leads. This is still a great piece, a funny story, you know, a heartfelt story. And and I just, you know, I can't say enough about applauding the filmmakers on this. Yeah.
But I wanted to know your experience as actors. We're hearing a lot that, as you say, opportunities for people of color are improving, you know, greater representation on screen, more diversity of roles. But then you hear a story like what Bao just said, and that was only a few years ago. So it's kind of sounds a bit depressing still. But I just wanted to throw it out to you guys and just, you know, what's your experience like? You know, are you noticing, you know, a shift, a change?
There is a change. I think of, you know, as an Asian American actor, I think it could be better. I mean, look, when I came in the 80s, and Elaine, please speak, like, you know, for me, I looked up to our black actors because for me, I remember as a kid when black actors were just thieves and criminals and all that stuff. But then you have all these heroic now images of Morgan Freeman, Denzel, Wesley, you know, all these guys. Yeah. As far as Asian American actors, we all thought like, hey, maybe one day, you know, we gotta keep fighting. It could be like that for us, you know? Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, it's, you know, it's a, you know, you look at the track record, right? Like if you look back, like Joy Luck Club was a massive hit. Mm-hmm. And at the time you're like, okay, that's representation. This is great. And there's a feeling of this anticipation of a hope, like maybe this is it. If we could prove that this could happen, then great. But nothing happened after that. Mm. And the next thing that happened after that would be like, say, Better Luck Tomorrow, which was this breakout, you know, critically acclaimed movie. Mm-hmm. Of young Asian, you know, I'm speaking primarily for the Asian community, but there was nothing after that as well. So sure, in this current climate, there is more opportunities for everybody. But my fear, and maybe it's because of the trauma that I've experienced as an actor coming up, is that that's great, but is there really going to be follow through on it? And it's a very great example of what you talked about with Bao, what they were going through. You know, it's same thing with Black Panther, where that came out. You're like, oh, great. This is going to pave the way. And what's really interesting is that, you know, even Kevin Feige and the Marvel team, there's been rumblings and talks about like how they were, now that Black Panther was, you know, successful, now let's really spearhead this Shang-Chi project. Yeah. You know, on its face value, you go, that's fantastic. But if you flip it the other way, so you needed a validation in order for you to pull the trigger on this other thing. So you could look at it any which way. But the great thing is that we are moving forward, right? It's much like these characters, not to bring it back to the movie, is that you make progress. You take one step forward, but you get knocked down to.
Yeah.
But you got to keep pushing. You got to keep moving. You got to keep growing. Yeah. So I agree with Ron, and yes, there is more opportunities, there's more avenues to tell stories, but representation is one thing and diversity is another, but what quality are those roles, right? Like mm-hmm. if you're just looking at numbers and say, oh, the percentage of it is like 30% people of color, great. But what are they doing? What are their jobs? And that goes not only in front of camera, but behind camera, you know? Most of those people could be just PAs, but they could flout the numbers and be like, oh, look at this. We're really diverse. But they're not in real position for any movement or power or to really voice their opinion. Yeah. So I think, again, it goes back to the first question you asked about, like, you know, how does it feel to be a filmmaker? And then seeing, you know, Bao and the producers put this together, man, they survived. And there's so many other filmmakers who didn't survive.
Yeah.
That they had to find other ways to make it work. I mean, can you imagine all the stories that could have been told? Like, I don't know. I'm really passionate about this because it's...
Yeah, of course. And that's the thing, because it's disheartening, because still, yes, it looks like it's, you know, we're in a positive time. But, you know, if the studio heads are still the same, you know, made up of the same people, and then the people in the casting rooms behind the scenes needs to change a bit more as well. That's just how I see it. Is that,
that's
agree with
exactly
that,
where I was going.
Yeah,
that's exactly where I was going. I'm not encouraged. I don't see change. I see changing in people, and those, it's that one person that says the Black Messiah. They shot the hell out of that. Oscar award-winning film. Nobody wanted to put nothing in it. One girl at Warner Brothers who had vision, who happened to be black, was like, yeah, no, we're going to do it. And then look what happened. Like, so what I'm excited about is this world, hence the election, is a melting pot. It is a bunch of different kinds of people. That's where I feel the shift. Different people in different offices who can say yes and no to different things. And if you don't understand the material, or you don't understand that community, or you haven't ever went to that community, you're never going to understand the possibilities. But if you get the one person whose job was to be, whose dream is to be vice president of a studio, and that person happens to be different, then different stories will be told. You know what I mean? And
yeah, yeah.
Where I'm seeing the change, it's like in the rooms when I go in, it's like all kinds of people. And that makes me feel hella more comfortable being me. You know, that used to be not that way. It was strictly 90-10. Like, I'm a little nervous. Like, how much black do they want? How much black is too much? How much is too edgy is the words. Like, how safe should I play this? Like, and now it's just like, how real can I be? Like, somebody in this room knows it and knows the story and knows it really. You know what I mean? So this is what Bao is. He is just a representation of, like, what you build when you deny. When you deny people, they get strong. And those people say no to you then. And then they just hold. And then that story lives anyway. And then you don't get to be a part of its huge success.
Yeah.
Like,
so they're the ones who missed out.
Yeah. That's right. So I'm excited about people. I'm seeing the change in people. And I think this film is coming at the right time when we can really start to unite instead of focusing on that division.
Abbott, you better give up.
Was the first time you saw this movie when it was finished was online? Because it got its premiere at the Fantasia Film Festival, is that right? That must have been a strange... Yeah. Was that a strange experience? Not getting the glitzy... You didn't get the glitzy red carpet deal.
I was very disappointed.
Yeah.
We didn't get to... Well, because, you know, we worked so hard on it. And one of the things that you want to do is celebrate the wins, right? Because God knows, we know we celebrate and wallow in the losses.
Yeah.
But in this instance, you know, we're premiering, and it was strange. It was really strange to not see Mikhail in person and not see Ron in person, give him hugs and be like, yo, look at what we, you know, we were involved in and we can be proud of. It was a strange feeling to say the least.
But look at what it's turned out to be.
Yeah.
So now we get that experience. And I was on pins and needles because I wanted to see it. And now we double back. I mean, God is great. And now we double back and we get the other experience. But we're going to be in a theater. And I'm going to be with my dogs.
And
you know what I mean? I'm good. Like, I'm good. Now, let's see what happens. Let's see. It's just timing, man. Timing is crazy. And, I was really happy to see it live. I mean, with each step, I'm nervous. Like, was it really going to show? Are we going to get in Fantasia? Are we actually going to view it? So, like, each one was a little...
That's the danger of sort of indie filmmaking, in a way, is that, you know, getting the movie done, not that that's the easy part, obviously that's challenging, but then you've got to get the movie sold and, you know, in front of eyes. You must all, you know, have experience and can speak to that. You know, you must be over the moon that, you know, you're now in this situation where, you know, this movie's going to land in theaters next week. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's exciting.
That's an awesome thing. Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, even when I saw it on Fantasia, I was actually really, really excited just to see everyone's work and you know, hard work, and it was so fun to watch. In fact, the people, our friends that did support it, when they came back and told me, oh my God, they looked like, that's when I missed the theater experience. Oh, wow. Could have been great, because it would have been packed house. It would have been, you know, just, you know, sharing in the laughter. But now maybe we can get that. It might be some social distance limitations, but you know, hey, I'll take it. We'll take it.
Yeah, yeah. I can't wait to see it in a theater. Yeah. That would be amazing. You've all been acting. You've been working in this game now for, you know, decades. You know, long distinguished careers. People who are entering this industry now, what sort of bit of advice would you be giving them? Let's go around the room. Ron, what's your thoughts?
Keep working on your craft. Do not be afraid of rejection. There's going to be people telling you from their own insecurities, own stuff, that, hey, man, you know, I don't know, man, are you sure you want to do that? Work on the craft. The harder you work on the craft, you know, feed that passion, feed that love, but work on the craft.
Very good. Elaine?
To everything that Ron said, and the one thing I'd like to add is to know that you belong. You know, that's the biggest thing, is that confidence is a big part of this industry, and the big part of your success is understanding that you belong. I certainly have trouble sometimes in terms of self-doubt, but we all go through that. And if I can give any advice, or at least some kind of insight to some of the things that we all go through, which is that you belong, and to also take risks, you know, because it might flop, but when it moves and it works, man, it's a massive gain. So always, always, always try. And, you know, like Ron said, be in class, work at it, but definitely feel like you belong and take risks.
Great. I just got one small thing to add to that.
Yeah.
You're enough.
Mm.
You ain't got to be nobody else. Know who you are and know you're enough. Big choices come because you're comfortable in who you are, and they're not big to you. They're your life choices. People get in these rooms, they try to become what they want. They don't know what they want. You're enough. Like, if you give them everything you are, you're enough. Know that.
Very good. Very good. This has been a blast. Really nice to chat to you all. And listen, best of luck with the movie. It's taken 10 years to get to this stage. Unbelievable. But, you know, I absolutely loved it. So, congratulations to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, brother.
My man.
Get some sleep.
Yeah. There we are, then. I do hope that was okay and you enjoyed listening to that. Not the usual slick production you might expect from the Kung Fu Movie Guide, but there we go. I still very much enjoyed that call and chatting to the cast of The Paper Tigers. So you were just listening to Arlene Ui, Ron Ewan, and Mikal Shannon Jenkins. I will be sure to put all of their social media details in the description of this episode. You can watch them all in The Paper Tigers, which is released in cinemas and on digital in Canada and the USA on the 7th of May. That's this Friday, courtesy of Walgo USA. Head to walgousa.com for more information about the film and to buy your tickets. You can also find out more about The Paper Tigers on social media. There are accounts that have been set up on Twitter and Instagram under the name @_ThePaperTigers, and also on Facebook. Simply head over to the website facebook.com/ThePaperTigersMovie. So a huge thank you to Tran Guoc Bao, and to Arlene, Ron and Mikal. Also a massive thank you to the team at MPRM. So that's Katie, Joe, Ash, Karen Tranwood and Kim Gutierrez. Also a huge thank you, of course, to you, the loyal Foo follower, who has listened to our Paper Tigers special all the way to the very end. Thank you so much for doing so. I will be back with another brand new episode from our 6th season of podcasts in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, please do stay safe, stay well, and take care. I will speak to you all again very soon on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.